morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. I'm your host this morning, Rob Burrows, United States Navy Seabee Senior Chief, retired in two combat tours in Iraq. I'm also the director for the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services, Silver Star Veterans and Widows Program. And right now we have our C for T, which is Christmas for the Troops, and also our Warm a Vet program, where we help to bring in hats and scarves and gloves and be able to hand those out to veterans, young and old, that are in need for cold weather clothing through the wintertime. And so I just would like to welcome you this morning to be part of our program. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is this next week that's coming up. And, you know, with everything that's going on in the world right now, we need to stop and we need to be thankful for what we have, because even though that there's sickness out there and other things going on, we need to be positive and we need to be thankful for those of us that are healthy and we have homes and we have our vehicles and we have our jobs. And even if you're struggling at this time and things are tough, we need to stop and say thank you. We need to appreciate the lives of our family. We need to appreciate our family members. We need to appreciate our freedom that we have in this nation. We need to appreciate our Northern California area. I'll tell you what, if you haven't stopped and paid attention as you're driving through our Northern California area right now, right now is one of the most beautiful times of our seasons here in Northern California. The trees are beautiful. The sky is blue. We have clouds out there. We've got a nice, stiff, cool breeze. What a change from the 105-degree days and the heat and the fire. And the rain that we've received so far has dampened all the dust and the smoke that's been out there. And it's just made it be a beautiful fall time. And so I am grateful and I am thankful for our weather change. I'm thankful for our beautiful Northern California area. Right now we have snow-capped Lassen and snow-capped Shasta. And you go outside, if you haven't stopped and taken a break, I recommend that you do. If you've been inside and you've been stuffy and you've been kind of sheltered away, I recommend that you go out and take a walk in the afternoon or the evening or first thing in the morning and enjoy the fresh air. Enjoy the blue sky. Enjoy the colors of the trees right now, because they'll be gone here in another couple weeks. So the wind blows, it gets a little bit colder, they'll all fall to the ground with our next freeze. And so I really encourage you to get out there this Thanksgiving Day. If you're not out with all of your family, take a walk out there. And you know what? If you're walking out in the fresh air, don't wear your mask, okay? You're not going to catch anything from the trees and the leaves falling. If there's nobody else on the sidewalk, take that mask off and walk out there freely and enjoy the beautiful Northern California fall that we have right now. And to be honest, it really surprises me as I drive down the street and I see people walking outside with their mask on. There is no virus in the fresh air. I see people riding their bike with their mask on. It's like, dude, take your mask off and enjoy the fresh air as you're riding your bike. There's no virus in the fresh air. And it always baffles me when you're only supposed to wear your mask around other people when you think there's an issue, but you don't wear your mask when you're outside enjoying the beautiful fresh air that we have. That beautiful fresh air, that fresh oxygen, God gave that to us. And it's there to enjoy. It's there to get that into our system so our bodies can rejuvenate with that fresh oxygen and just get out there and clear your mind of all the things that are going on. And, you know, right now is a wonderful time for us to appreciate our freedom, to appreciate the liberties that we have. Even though there's all kinds of still chaos going on in the election and different things that are going on in your own personal life right now, it's an opportunity for you to just take a deep breath, go for a walk, enjoy that opportunity, like I said, to enjoy a beautiful fall that we're having right now. Hey, we don't have 3 feet of snow on the ground. It's not 14 minus outside. We have one of the greatest places here in Northern California. We really do see four seasons here. And without the extra snow, maybe we'll see sometime this year. You never know. But right now, it's just a beautiful place out there and a beautiful time. I'd like to remind you right now, the Northern California Veterans Museum and Homeward Bound and Silver Star Widows Program is doing a Holiday Meals Military Families Program. And we are still accepting items for Thanksgiving meals to be able to help take care of our military families and widows here in our Northern California area. And so I'd like to remind you, if you're interested in donating You know, Thanksgiving is next week, but we are still accepting food items for the families. The phone number for the Veterans Museum office is 378-2280. That's 378-2280. And I'm only in the office a couple of days a week because I'm out taking care of a lot of other business here in our community. But we're still receiving canned food items, stuffing, rice, potatoes, cookie package mixes, turkeys. If you'd like to really donate a large item, an extra turkey or a ham would be greatly appreciated. That helps offset the cost of our program. Gravy, you know, the string beans and corn, different things that you would have in a normal holiday meal. Those are the items that we provide military families that are in need. We go ahead and we help get them a turkey and all the fixings that go with it so that they have food for not just one or two days, but they have food for an entire week. And the whole idea for us is to be able to help offset their costs and their living if they don't have the money or the opportunity to afford or be able to take care of that. It is one way that we give back to our veterans in our Northern California communities. I'd like to do a shout-out to Golden Valley Bank. Christy Davis, that's over there, they worked with us with the Iron Soldier Ride. They were one of our primary supporters and financial supporters through this program. They are the one of the companies that help us and are moving forward to be able to take care of this. And without organizations and businesses in our community that step up and help us with these programs, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. The Northern California Veterans Museum and its sub-programs only survive based on the donations that come in the door. And when those donations come in, nobody takes a wage. So all of those items, our goal and our motto is we make dollars out of nickels because we have to make every dollar stretch because nothing in, nothing out. Zero from zero is zero. And in everything that we do is in a positive manner to give back to our veterans and our community. The whole idea is to make sure that we help our veterans. We give them a hand up and not a handout. And we encourage them in their jobs. We encourage them in their lives. We encourage them to be good community citizens in our community. When everything else seems to be falling apart, we want to make sure that because they served our nation, they can serve here at home and they can be appreciated for what they've done and where they've been and what they've seen. And so once again, as we move forward into Thanksgiving and Christmas, we'll be taking these items and we'll be giving them back out to those that are in need in our community that are military families and veterans. And then also, once again, we're still looking for smaller items. We'll be shipping boxes out here in December. Our program is set up for December 6th. Obviously, at this point, it looks like that we're not going to be able to have an event once again because everything seems to be shut down. But we are going to do a drive-by barbecue on December 6th. That will be at the Old Fires House down in Cottonwood, the Old Fire Station, which is now the restoration facility for the Northern California Veterans Museum. And we'll be receiving those items there December 6th. And we'll take those items in. We'll get them prepared for boxes and for the families for the Christmas meals. And then we'll go ahead and take those and get those redistributed out to those that are in need. We'll get those boxes. We'll be shipping them overseas to our military personnel, men and women who are serving around the world right now, making sure that we continue to have the freedom that we have. They're there by themselves doing a duty that is thankless many times. Their lives are in harm's way. And unless they hear from us here at home, sometimes the morale can be pretty tough, especially during the holidays. And so I remember that when I served in Iraq during Christmas, and we received boxes from home from total strangers. It was always it's just cool to get a box from somebody you don't know. And you open it up and there's candy and there's cookies and there's cards to say thank you for your service and Merry Christmas and God bless you for what you're doing. And we want to continue that tradition. We should, as Americans, continue to say thank you every opportunity we get to our veterans, whether they're serving abroad or whether they're at home wearing a service hat here in our community that says they served, whether it's Korea or Vietnam. We've got less and less World War II veterans or Iraq, Afghanistan. We wouldn't have what we have if it wasn't for our veterans who serve and sacrifice for us, for the things that we have every day that we take for granted. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
At Golden Valley Bank, our mission is to create a truly unique local banking experience. We understand how important it is to be known and heard by your bank. That's why we take the time to connect with you and the community you live in. When you bank with us, we put your money back into our community by supporting local nonprofits who provide services for those that need it most. Golden Valley Bank, a bank built for business, a bank built for community, a bank built for you. Learn more at goldenvalley.bank. Member FDIC.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
There it is. How about now? Is it working yet?
Nope.
Are you on Channel 3?
Why do you keep asking?
Stop asking me why I keep asking Mommy things. Wait, what remote are you using?
The one you handed me.
No, use the gray remote.
There are three of them.
Pick them all up and press the number 3.
Why isn't there an easier way to get all my shows?
I hear you. And we have something for this.
Thank you.
Fine, you know what? We're all reading books.
Stop switching inputs and switch to Dish and get Netflix, YouTube, and more at the push of a button. Dish, tuned into you.
Hey guys, this is Doug Tooley with B&T Satellite, your authorized Dish retailer. We've been offering savings since 1999. Being local, we listen to your needs in the TV entertainment, and we give you the best that we can. At B&T Satellite, we've saved some of our customers $600 to $1,200 per year, and these prices are locked in for 2 years.
Call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH. That's 241-3474.
B&T Satellite is a Dish authorized retailer. Restrictions apply. Ask for details.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces. All day through, in that small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel, the chestnut trees, the wishing well. In every lovely summer's day, in everything that's light and gay, I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun,
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that is a beautiful World War II song by Rosemary Clooney. And the reason that I'm playing that this morning is because this morning we are remembering a World War II veteran, Thomas Johnson, Private Thomas Johnson, United States Marine Corps, 2nd Marine Division, served during World War II in the Battle of Bashio, the Battle of Tarawa Atoll. And just in the last few months, his remains were found on the island of Tarawa, and they were interred. They had taken DNA from the family, and they had gone through and recognized they had found him in a mass grave there on Tarawa, and they have exhumed his body and brought it back to the United States. And the reason that we're talking about Tom Johnson, Private Tom Johnson, United States Marine Corps, World War II, 2nd Division, is because he is going to be laid to rest at the Igo Veterans Cemetery on Monday. And if you don't know about World War II and the fight through the South Pacific that the Americans fought against the Japanese during World War II, the Battle of Tarawa took place November 20th through the 23rd, 4 days of hell on a small island 2 miles long. The U.S. began a Central Pacific campaign against Japan by seizing the heavily fortified Japanese-held island of Bashio in the Tarawa Atoll in the Gilbert Islands. The 18,000 U.S. Marines sent to a tiny Bashio were expected to easily secure it. However, problems quickly arose. Low tides prevented some U.S. landing craft from clearing the coral reefs that ringed the island. Japanese coastal guns pounded and snagged vessels, and separate Marines gave up on freeing the boats and instead waded towards shore, hundreds of yards away through chest-deep water amidst heavy enemy fire. Despite heavy resistance from 4,500 Japanese troops dug in on Bashio, the Marines finally took the island after a bloody 76-hour battle in which both sides suffered heavily with casualties. And if you didn't know, there was 1,000 Marines lost their lives in 4 days, and 2,000 that were wounded or injured on Bashio in 76 hours there. During World War II, the first battle that we fought was the Battle of Guadalcanal in 1942. That battle was 6 months long, and we lost 1,000 Marines in a six-month time frame. So when it came to Bashio and the island of Tarawa, we lost 1,000 Marines killed in action in 4 days. That was one of the heaviest tolls that we suffered at the very beginning of the war. It was an outrage to the American public that so many Marines gave their lives in such a short period of time. But it was a heavy learning lesson for the United States, because at that time, this is only our second main battle at the beginning of the war against the Japanese. Our radios weren't watertight. They hit the water. They were done. There was no communication. So if they weren't taken care of, they had no communication on the shorelines. There were the units that were made it to the shoreline. They were scattered. They were bewildered. They were. This is the first time those young Marines had been in combat, and so there was a lot of chaos and things that were going on, and so it was a very horrific time in learning curve, vertical learning curve for the United States and the United States Marine Corps. The Gilbert Islands, a group of 16 atolls near the equator, were viewed by the U.S. as a stepping stone to the Marshall Islands and became the first target of the Central Pacific Campaign. In November of 1943, the U.S. launched an offensive codenamed Operation Galvanic, in which the prime target was the tiny island of Bashio in the Tarawa Atoll and the Gilbert Islands. Compared with taking the Tarawa, the U.S. faced far less Japanese resistance at Macon, an American-secured atoll by 23rd of 1943 and late of 41. Tarawa, a coral atoll located some 2,500 miles southwest of Hawaii, had been seized by the Japanese, who heavily fortified Bashio's largest target. And it was amazing because the emperor, or excuse me, the major general there on Bashio in Tarawa had said that it would take 100 years and 1 million military Marines or Army to be able to take that island. And the Marines said, that's not good enough for us. We're going to go ahead and we're going to shell that island with the Navy. We're going to go ahead and we're going to move forward. There was a total of 18,000 Marines that landed on that shoreline The ship showed up on November 17th, and by November 19th, they were prepared and ready to offset, to unload, and be able to move forward. And that was before we were, our ships were too large to be able to come in close to the shoreline, so they had to use amphibious vehicles. But they had mistimed the level of the water that was coming in, the tide, and the tide was out at the time they came in, and the coral reefs were only 3 feet below the surface of the water. And so those amphibious vehicles were heavy, and they would stick, and they would hang up on the shoreline. And so if the Marines did not get out of those amphibious vehicles, they were just setting targets for the artillery of the Japanese during that time frame. And so that's why they got out, and they waded ashore, and that's how so many of the Marines lost their lives, because, once again, as we talked about, they were targets in the shoreline as they were walking chest deep. And it was... we had some Marines here that lived here in our community that were heroes, that had survived that time frame, and they were here. There's a gentleman that was part of our Marine Corps ball, was here all the time, and he just passed away this last year. And to stop and listen to him talk about how they fought the Japanese face to face, and at night the Japanese would come up, and they would be fighting them face to face in the nighttime. It was 76 hours of hell during that time frame. And on the second day, November 22nd, is when Tom Johnson gave his life. He received a Silver Star and a Purple Heart for his actions that day. They needed more ammunition. He went to another location to get ammunition and bring it back, because on the forward line, they had completely run out. There was no ammunition. They had fired it all downrange at the Japanese. And as he was bringing the ammunition back, he was mortally wounded. He was wounded. He made it back to the line to bring that ammunition, but he gave his life there on that shoreline, on that tiny island, 2 miles long. And so today we want to make sure that we remember Tom Johnson as we prepare to lay him to rest on Monday. We're bringing him home. We're remembering him. We're remembering all the Marines that gave their lives. We're remembering all the men and women who gave their lives during World War II. And for us to be able to move forward and to be able to have what we have. And it was an honor and a privilege. They asked Mark George, the director of the Veterans Museum, asked me to come out and put together a display for the Veterans Museum for this particular event. And this last week, I spent time out there putting together a display of a World War II Marine in a World War II uniform with the M1 carbine, the M1 Grand, with a 1911 45, with all of the items that were there, the entire collection. If you go out to the Veterans Cemetery and see that collection in their library there, in their lobby, is all World War II artifacts. They're the original items from that time frame, the K-bars, the bayonets, and in the bottom of the display is his Purple Heart and a Silver Star. And the World War II medals that represent our military personnel who served during that time frame. And as I was putting that display together, I was thinking about what took place after knowing the history and being able to put that uniform on the mannequin and the combat helmet on his helmet, putting the leggings on his spats, on his boots. And then stepping back and looking at that and seeing exactly what that Marine would have looked like as he left the shoreline, as he left the boat, and he was headed toward that shoreline. And listening, we listened to the artillery and the machine gun fire and a mortar fire and all those different things when we were in Iraq on a daily basis. We listened to the enemy in one action or another, whether it was along where we were at or whether it was another location. And at times it was extreme and it was heavy, and at other times it wasn't as so much. But those sounds and those smells, even though they were in the desert, they come back and they bring the memory of what it's like to be in combat, and the fear and the sweat. We carried armored vests, and these men only had a steel pot on their head. They only had a helmet to protect them from flak. And they had cotton shirts and pants, but no protection other than that. And what a different time frame it was for the sacrifice of what they gave for us. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Quick and Clean All Cloth Car Wash at 1210 Market Street in downtown Reading has the perfect gift this holiday season. Car wash coupons, or choose from 4 different car wash packages. Car washes start at just $9, or you can choose from a variety of car wash packages. Buy 5 car wash packages and get one free. or buy 10 and get 3 free. Quick and Clean All Cloth Car Wash at 1210 Market Street in downtown Reading. Quick and clean.
These are unprecedented times. Challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency child care, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us for a better us.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
We are Women of Vision.
Hi, I'm Haley Clandenny.
And I'm Maurice Brown.
Join us for the Women of Vision show Tuesday nights from 6 to 7.
Women of Vision is a movement, women empowering women, locally and globally. We connect female professionals and entrepreneurs and encourage women to collaborate and achieve their personal and professional goals.
With a spirit of integrity and excellence, we will motivate you to thrive, activating your unique ability. Join us Tuesday nights from 6 to 7 on KCNR 96.5 FM.
Everybody, it is my happy privilege to introduce a new song, God Bless America.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and God bless America. I tell you what, we need to remember that we would not have what we have if it wasn't for the grace of God. You know, the good Lord gives us the salvation for our hearts, but the men and women who fight and sacrifice give us the freedom here that we have here in our nation. And it's the men and women who step up and lay down their lives and serve in our places, in our steads. Because I'm not serving our nation right now overseas. I'm retired from the Navy after 23 years of giving my opportunity to be able to be there and set forth and to be able to serve. My father was a World War II veteran. My grandfather was a World War I veteran. And so as I served, I looked back to my father, looked at his service, and I looked at what he endured. And he set the example for me in my life so that as I served, I knew if my father could endure that and that if he could do that, then it was up to me to be able to step forward and to be able to do that myself. Many people don't have that concept. Many people don't have that idea. Well, they did it. I'm not going to because they did it. Well, that's fine. That's you and that's your life. But I was raised to understand with sacrifices. My mother would sit down. My dad would not talk about it. My mother would sit down and she would share what took place with my uncles that were in the South Pacific and my father that was in the South Pacific. And everything that took place during that time frame, because I am a World War II kid. And so that's one of the reasons that it's always on my heart. And that's one of the reasons that I served was because of knowing what took place. When my brother was serving during Vietnam, and as a young boy, I would watch the newsreels and watch what was going on with the war in Saigon and the jungle fights and the battles that were taking place. And I feared for my brother's life during that time frame. But it made me wanted to join the fight. It made me wanted to be a part of that. It made me wanted to step up and do my part. And that's what I did. I stepped up, and as a Navy CB, I was able to do my part and serve to combat tours in Iraq. My guest this morning is Master Chief Mike Van Gundy. And Mike and I served together throughout the years. He also served in Iraq also. And good morning, Mike. Welcome to Battlefield Expressions.
Good morning, Rob.
And pull your mic just a little bit closer to you there so and talk almost right up to it. And so this morning, Mike, 31 years?
32.
32 years. And you're retiring just the next month or right now? Or
right now I'm looking at February of 21.
Well, you just stretched it out as long as you could, didn't you?
Pretty much.
Mike, your dad was a Vietnam veteran, and he served. I'm not sure about your grandfather or the other veterans in your family, but this morning, thank you for being here. Thank you for being a part of the program this morning. And I'd like we served together also at the Veterans Cemetery. We did many funerals together honoring our veterans, whether it was Navy or Merchant Marine, Coast Guard, even with the Marines and the Army at times and the Air Force. Tell us a little bit about the influence in your life from your family members and why you joined the Navy.
Well, my father was a CB as well, so I'm a second generation CB. Just something to reflect what you were saying. You know, it's funny because I don't remember my dad talk. You know, you get the fun parts they did, but they never talk about the war aspect. And it didn't ever dawn on me till later on. Till you've been overseas and then been in a combat zone, then you can relate why they never talked about it. And why I joined, it wasn't nothing like, you know, your aspect, but it was more I was kind of a loose cannon.
Kind of? Still?
Still am. Just a little bit more professional at it now. But you just, I just needed that structure, and I just, you know, and I think that was the best thing. It was more of me doing it. You know, I was told about the military, you know, but I'd never, just because I was told about it and didn't want to do it. Typical 18-year-old kid didn't want to listen. But it came around, and I tell you, that's probably the best thing I ever did, you know, when I signed up. And I did not have no intention of making a career out of it. And here I am 32 years later. I forgot to get off when my reenlistment ended, and now I'm told to go home. So
it's amazing that, like you said, you know, every time the reenlistment comes up, you go, oh, man, do I want to do another four, another six, another whatever it is the extension is going to be? Okay. When I joined, it was an eight-year enlistment up front. And so by the time I got to 8 years, I thought, I'm halfway here. There's days that you love it. There's days that you hate it. The days you're going to walk away and you never want to come back. You're done with it. I don't want to serve underneath that commander or that lieutenant or that chief or that first-class petty officer or whatever. I'm done. And then you go back, you're thinking about it, and it's like, okay, well, I'm not going anywhere because I'm under contract, so I better just do a good job and keep going forward.
Well, you got to look at the advantage of that, though, Rob, is versus a civilian job where most of these guys, you know, guys and gals, you know, stay with that job for – and it's the same people in the military. We're almost guaranteed every 3 years you're going to get a new – new set
new
of
command.
New command, new, you know, new leadership, and you know, as individuals, we're going to get promoted, so we're going to be moving up in these spots, and we're going to be moved out as well. So that's one thing I like about the military. When you talk about, gosh, there's days you're like, what was I thinking? What, you know, or you know, it's time for me to punch out of here, and but it's just because we have such a revolving door, it just it does make it nice sometimes. So.
Sometimes they think they make it too easy for people to step away and not be held to their obligation to do what needs to be done. They just think of the immediate situation. They never think about 6 months to 4 years to a lifetime down the road. I don't know how many veterans that I talk to, they come to the museum or that I meet out and about, and they say, you know, I wish I had stayed in.
Yes.
My wife wanted me to get out, so I got out, and 6 months later, the wife divorced them, and then now they can't get back in. There's so many different situations where people are so overwhelmed at that immediate point in their life that it's hard to see the forest for the trees. And even today, with everything going on in our lives, it's hard to see the forest for the trees. So it's so important for us to step back and evaluate what's going on in our life without making snap decisions like that.
Absolutely. You know, the one that really baffles me more is the ones that are stepping out, you know, say they got 12 plus years, you know, the 12 to 16 year mark. And I could not tell you how many times in my career, like, why, you know, and it's usually, you know, they have family issues and blah, blah, blah. And you're going, you know, hey, just, you know, you tell me you just can't stick for four more and just get your retirement in and try to make it work out or whatever. You know, it's just, like you said, once you step away and you get that many years, it's literally impossible for you to come back in. And unless you are somebody in the medical field that they specifically need those people because they had such a high turnover rate as it is. But, you know, as leaders, that was probably one of the toughest things to try to do is convince people, hey, you're almost there. Let's try to work through this. What do you need from the military to help you out, or you and your family or whatever? So I totally agree with what you were saying.
Well, and then also, you know, as we became senior enlisted, which is senior enlisted with E7 or chief, senior chief and master chief of those positions, your eyes are open to a broader scheme of things. You're no longer looking at just as a second-class petty officer or first-class petty officer in those ranges, because at that point you're looking up, you're hoping, but there's a cavern between first-class petty officer and chief.
Yes.
And so many people try and shoot for that and never make it. It took me 7 times to make first-class petty officer. I made chief first round.
Yes.
Which was just unbelievable to me that I was able to step forward and take it the first test and make chief the first test at 9.5 years.
Well, it's so funny on that because I always tell the sailors, it's like, you know, it's catching the wave just right. And promotion, and you know, you got to be ready. You know, I was a E4 for 7 years and then couldn't make E5, and all of a sudden, bam, then everything else just lock and step first time or the second time look at and got promoted. So like I said, it's just catching the wave, right? And it's a lot of based on what your MOS is, you know, what's the turnover rate.
Well, that's the main thing, is to make sure. I think a lot of times our career counselors and people who give that advice, they don't always paint the entire picture that needs to be painted for that particular individual and to see what's going on. And we'll talk a little bit more about that on the return side. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Dr. Farrell in Palisadro is now making dental work more affordable by offering a Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership. The Dental Discount Savings Plan is simple, straightforward, and includes 20% off all treatment, such as emergency limited exams, restorative work, fillings, crowns, partials, bridges, dentures, and periodontal treatment, a comprehensive exam, oral cancer screening, a TMJ exam, a periodic exam, and two sets of x-rays, along with cleaning and two fluoride treatments. The program is a discount plan, not a dental insurance plan, and is only available at the office of Dr. Farrell. The Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership provides immediate eligibility. No yearly maximum, no deductibles, no claims to submit, no limitations for pre-existing treatment, and no waiting periods. Children on the plan must be 15 years or younger. Some restrictions apply. Membership prices may vary. Contact Dr. Farrell, located at 9461 Deschutes Road, Suite 2 in Palisadro. Call 547-57 to make an appointment today. That's 547-5757.
Did you know that lung cancer is the number one cause of cancer deaths amongst both men and women? And that smoking or vaping are major risk factors? November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Let's save lives by helping people kick smoking and vaping, and by encouraging past smokers to get regular screenings. If you or someone in your life needs support to quit smoking or vaping, talk with your healthcare provider. This public service message is brought to you by Dr. Pramila Dhanuka and Pace Cancer Center.
Black Bear Diner is celebrating this fall with the craze you'll crave.
A craze I'll crave?
Yes. Cheesecake drizzled with pumpkin spice, praline sauce, and chopped pecans. Sip on a creamy pumpkin pie cold brew or savor pumpkin spice pancakes with maple butter for the perfect fall experience. Now for a limited time only.
I'm craving it already.
Black Bear Diner has carryout, curbside pickup, and delivery options.
Start your order at blackbeardiner.com or visit them on site for an outdoor dining experience.
Black Bear Diner.
As part of Operation Holiday Salute, Snow's Wedding and Party Rentals would like to take this moment to thank our veterans for their service. Snow's has been in Reading since 1994 and is your complete celebration headquarters with their decorations and rentals, including tables and chairs, linens, centerpieces, and so much more. Snow's Wedding and Party Rentals at 3066 Crossroads Drive. Call 222-8606. That's 222-8606.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. My guest this morning is Master Chief Mike Van Gundy, United States Navy Seabees. And following in the tradition of his father, Whitey Van Gundy, who was a Seabee in 1962. Was he a 62 for 4 or 5, 6 years?
I want to say 65 to 69.
Oh, I thought it was earlier than
that. Yeah, it was right in the middle of the 60s.
The very beginning of Vietnam. And I love your dad. Your dad's a great guy. He's a mentor to me also. When he shows up, I listen. I just shut up and I listen. He's always got some great things to say. He's been there. He's done that. And, you know, after losing my father and my brother, these other older veterans like that I meet and I talk with, you know, they become my surrogate father or brother.
Yes.
Or mentor. And to be able to listen to some words of wisdom, some words of color, some words of tales. A little bit of everything, which makes it nice because, and sometimes we get serious and we talk about the serious stuff.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is it's a camaraderie. It doesn't matter if he's 70 or 80 and I'm 50 something. The camaraderie of being in the Seabees, the camaraderie of being in the Navy, the camaraderie of serving your country, that gels, that comes together.
Yes.
And I think that that's one of the best parts about talking and working with our older veterans is listening to where they've been and what they've said and what they're doing, and to be able to cherish that. Because when they're gone, they're gone.
Yes.
I mean, we're down to less than a half a percent of our World War II veterans. A half a percent, ladies and gentlemen, and they'll be gone.
Yep.
And that'll be a complete generation. And I think that influence of our World War II generation that is missing is part of the issues that we're having in our nation right now, because they came back from the war and they had learned so many lessons, and they brought initiative, and they brought inventions, and they brought mindsets to be able to build things and to make it a better world at this time. And then once everybody had a freedom that they had earned, then it started to be abused and taken advantage of. And we have people now who have never served our nation. Their families have never served our nation, and they don't know what the cost of freedom is. They don't know why we have what we have. But there's silver spoons of freedom, if I could use that term. And if you know what a silver spoon is, it's a person that's had everything good their entire life, and they've never had to work for anything. And I think that that's what our nation is it's a nation full of silver spoon people who don't know what freedom is and the cost and the sacrifice of what it takes every day for us to have. And because they don't have that education, they're so willing to throw it away or to give it away because they don't understand that cost. And the only way that will ever be learned again will be to have such suppression to where the next generation will want to fight to have that freedom again, because once it's gone, it's gone. And we need to regard that and remind every day. Mike, take us back to some of those early days when you first joined the Navy and you're going through boot camp and some of those different ordeals and learning lessons that you learned during that time frame for our public out there.
Well, boot camp. Talk about not being on the company commanders were definitely not PC guys like they are today. Talking about an eye-opener.
We're old school.
Oh, yeah.
You and I are still old school.
Holy cow. I remember, my boot camp was in Great Lakes, and it was in August, and that was the first time that I was introduced to humidity. I've never sweated so much in my life out there.
Because you came from college.
Yes.
You grew up here in our community.
Correct. And going to the Midwest was an eye-opener. But the other one I got a kick out of is I remember we were getting late, and they threw us in our racks, and then remember that stupid trash can in the belly club come banging in there, and you thought, what in the world? You know, you're out of a sound sleep, you're tired as hell, and you just got there, and having this guy trash can in a belly club racking that, and then, you know, yelling and screaming and telling what he's going to do, some god-awful things to your mom and blah, 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 and you're just like, where you thought you were in a nightmare, you know, where in the hell am I? And but it that was an interesting time frame, because just seeing all different types of walk of life of people from our great country, and just remember how we all were just, we all didn't get along at first, because, you know, again, we all come from different parts of the country. But at the end of the boot camp, after, you know, we had that common bonding, and that's the whole purpose of boot camp, really, is just the structure. It's like, that's why we all have the same haircuts, same uniform. They strip who you think you are to make you one person, to get that team concept, you know, one team, one fight, or one fight, one team. And but boot camp was interesting, and this is a clean program, so I can't get into the R-rated section of the boot camp, but it was an eye-opener. And it's a lot different from today.
Well, there's no – yeah, I was going to say. You know,
a lot different.
If you watch Full Metal Jacket with the Marine Corps, that's kind of like it was all across all of the different boot camps. It didn't make any difference. Somebody was always in your face.
Yes.
Literally, you were at attention. Somebody was always nose-to-nose in your face for one – didn't matter whether you did it or not. They were in your face. The whole idea is for you to be able to learn to be able to take that stress up close and personal.
Yes.
Not
on the personal. They don't want you to take it personal.
The personal I mean is being so close in your space.
Oh, yeah.
There is no bubble anymore.
No.
You're in your space.
Right. Well, they're just trying to, you know, again, it's a breakdown. Hey, you know, you mentioned about having a silver spoon for the first 18 years, and I still remember the coming commander goes, you know, we got to wipe out that. You have 18 years of bad habits, and we're going to clean it up for you, you know. And that's, I just always remember that slogan, you know. And it's still, you know, they still have that today, but it's not as, it's not hardcore. And then I kind of feel sometimes that we see these kids when they come into the main unit, you have to be careful because, you know, they can't handle some of that stress and it's kind of frustrating because you're just like, hey, you know, that's not the way I was brought up. And it's hard for the longer you've been in, you know, they want you to change versus the youngsters that are coming in, you know. And that's probably the one thing I always had a hard time with is like, hey, you know, if I did it, you can do it, you know. But that's just the different mentality they have today.
Well, and I understand that concept makes it tough when you say, if I could do it, you could do it. But we were held to a greater standard when we first went in than the soldiers and the sailors and the Marines that are there today.
Yes.
They're not held to the same standard that we were held to. And, you know, even when we went through the Chief's initiation and we did what we did, we were at the very end of the old school of Chief's initiations.
Yes.
And now it's just called a transition. There's nothing that goes along with that. And if you ask me, when I went through the Chief's initiation, when I made Chief, it's an ordeal that you go through. At that time, it was an ordeal that
yes.
you went through.
Yes.
We'd call it a crucible, a minor crucible compared to maybe what the Marines went through.
Yes.
Through their boot camp, but it was similar to that. And some of the things that I endured during that time, because I think we had a pretty harsh one when I went through. I mean, it was pretty old school. And some of the things that I learned going through that Chief's initiation were things that helped give me strength when I was in Iraq.
Yes.
Enduring. The biggest thing is enduring things you don't like. Being brought to a fact where you can endure things that will not kill you, whether you like them or not, but they will get you through a difficult situation. And some boot camp is made that way, but a lot of that training comes back through SARS training, which is search, air, and rescue, or through combat training, or some of our exercises that we did that put us forward to be able to get us into that situation. And I think that that's one of the things that we're missing in our nation right now, Mike, is that we have so many people that take the easy road that when the road gets difficult, they have no idea what to do. They freak out. They don't now have a clue. They don't know how to think. They're not disciplined. They don't know what it's like to keep their head in a tough situation. And what did Rudyard Kipling said? He said, if you can keep your head, young man, when all the rest of the world is failing and falling apart, then you've become a man. And I always listened to that. I used to love to read Rudyard Kipling, and I would listen to that and think the same thing in my Navy career. I applied that to my Navy career because there was times when we were in Iraq and we were in situations and we were under fire and we were in difficult situations. And as a leader, especially coming from the Chiefs community, it was so important for us to keep that mindset, to be able to manage ourselves in such a difficult situation. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
News from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Breaking news this hour at townhall.com. I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Many Republican legislators in states where coronavirus cases have surged are rejecting mask-wearing requirements, even in their own capitals. One Arkansas state senator is now proposing that her colleagues risk losing their per diem if they're cut, not wearing a mask. Meanwhile,
California is enacting a nighttime curfew to help stop the spread of coronavirus, but the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Captain Edward Ramirez stresses they won't be arresting people, at least not for now.
Our goal is to not arrest folks. Our goal is to not use the criminal law to enforce these things, but to utilize education, to utilize humanity, to talk to folks about the issues.
The new restrictions say people should stay home from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., except for essential errands. Colorado's 3rd District has a new lawmaker representing them, Lauren Boebert, a gun rights activist and the owner of Shooter's Grill and Rifle Colorado.
I have a little nit there. All of my waitresses open carry firearms, so we kind of have a platform for the Second Amendment. And I became a small-time Second Amendment advocate right there at home in Rifle, Colorado.
Boebert spoke with the Salem Radio Network this week as she was in Washington for freshman orientation on Capitol Hill. The U.S. and Taiwan stepping up cooperation in a newly created economic dialogue.
This marks another move from the Trump administration to increase official exchanges with the self-governing island. Both sides have signed the 5-year agreement establishing the U.S.-Taiwan Economic Prosperity Partnership Dialogue. The dialogue is meant to take place annually. The deal falls short of a long-desired bilateral agreement, but marks a key step that increases cooperation between Washington and Taipei.
That report from correspondent Andrew Stewart, China is criticizing the step as provocative. More of these stories at townhall.com.
This message is for anyone looking for $500,000 to $1 million or more of affordable term life insurance, even if you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or taking anxiety meds. Here's an example. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe overweight with type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term life insurance may only cost about $200 a month. We're Term Provider, experts in finding affordable term life insurance for those that may not be in perfect health. If you've had prostate cancer, heart conditions, high cholesterol, or on prescription medications, you may still qualify for $500,000 to $1 million or more of affordable term life insurance. Get a quick quote by calling Term Provider at 800-555-2085. 800-555-2085. If you're looking for term life insurance but have type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, or have other health issues, call Term Provider at 800-555-2085 or visit termprovider.com. Termprovider.com.
Many college students are facing one more exam prior to Thanksgiving break this year. A coronavirus test, as correspondent Ed Donahue explains.
The fear is college students heading home could also bring the virus home. Various schools have various types of tests.
Saliva and a swab deep into your nose.
At the University of Utah, Lori McDonald says they found a way to test more students.
We're using a rapid test that allows the person to do it themselves, kind of take a swab of their nose.
Devin King got the test.
It was a little strange at first, definitely having to put something up your nose. Definitely felt weird for the first time doing it. It wasn't as bad as I expected, though. I've heard a lot of horror stories.
The University of Pittsburgh isn't testing students before they leave, worried the test could be unreliable, giving students a false sense of security. I'm Ed Donahue.
Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. Louisiana landlords filed a federal lawsuit seeking to overturn a moratorium on evictions ordered by the CDC to avoid spreading the novel coronavirus.
The suit says that the, quote, CDC's eviction moratorium represents a sweeping assumption of power by an administrative agency that it simply does not possess. The CDC's order came about 3 weeks after President Trump issued an executive order telling federal health officials to consider measures to temporarily halt evictions. Landlords in 13 other states in the District of Columbia are trying to overturn state or city eviction moratoriums.
This correspondent Jeremy House reporting, former Vice President Joe Biden is pushing Congress to approve billions of dollars in emergency COVID-19 assistance before Inauguration Day. He said on Friday in a meeting with the top Democrats in the House and Senate, such a package should be approved during the lame duck session. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Senior Chief Rob Burrows, retired United States Navy Seabees. My guest this morning is Master Chief Mike Van Gundy, United States Seabees. He's retired now, just coming up on in February, 31 years serving our United States and the United States Navy. And, Mike, I served 23 years in the Navy and never put foot on a ship. How much sea duty did you have actually being on a ship?
My sea counter is quadruple zero. I'm just like you, a dirt sailor.
That's right. If you didn't know, the Seabees are construction battalion, and it's very rare unless you're coming to the Seabees from another rate, which was a fleet rate. We are dirt sailors. The only thing we ever see is a Humvee or used to be deuce and a half. So not deuce and a half, they're MTBRs, which is a great big military truck that we use right now, or it's a dozer on our side, or a grader, or it's dirty, muddy cement boots when we're pouring concrete pads, or it's leather gloves when we're laying down concertina wire, or digging the ditches for utilities or whatever else. I mean, you and I've worked many different projects, and we've been dirt high, sweaty, salty in the middle of it, and at the end of the day, it's a good day because we were able to accomplish a lot of good different things and different projects that we worked on all around the world. And Mike and I had when we first came across each other, he was a third-class petty officer, and I was a second-class petty officer back in 1996. And I made first, and he made second, and I would give him my old crows.
Yes.
So the tradition is that if you make rate, that you give your crows, your collar devices, to somebody that's at a junior rank so that when they make that next rate, that they can wear your collars. And so I gave Mike my second-class crows. Yep. I gave him my first-class crows. I gave him my chief's anchors, and then he made chief, and then he made senior chief, and then he gave me his senior chief anchors when I made senior chief because he passed me up.
That's where, all right, that's
and,
right.
Yeah, and then you made master chief from there as I made senior chief. So I was medically retired after I came back from Iraq, and you continued to move forward up the chain, and you made master chief. And Mike, I just want to thank you for your service to our nation, our country, to the United States Navy, and to our community. Tell us a little about when you were that transition from first to making chief, and then also as you've moved up the chain of command to master chief and what it's been like as a master chief.
Yeah, earlier you were talking about there is a difference when you go from first class, which is E6, to a chief, which is E7, because there's a whole different outlook of responsibility.
It's a leadership transition.
Oh, big time. And it's... the other services have that, but it's not. We got a little bit more. I feel a little bit more in power on our responsibility, versus the other services don't have that. They have responsibility, but it's not the power that's given to us.
Well, the chief petty officer is actually a congressional appointment. When you make chief petty officer, you are congressionally appointed as a chief petty officer of the United States Navy.
Yes.
And so, if you get busted as a chief, you stay as a chief. I mean, if you get busted as a first class, you get busted all the way down to third class or whatever it is. So it's, I mean, there's a ceiling there that goes up, and there's a ceiling there that goes down.
Yes. And, you know, and there's a lot of responsibility, you know, and that's the reason we were talking about in the last segment. We were talking about, the initiation or the transition, depends on what time period you were selected in. But, you know, you know, that's the reason why we go through that stuff we mentioned earlier. It's just, again, you know, you might have been say first 13 years of your career, you picked up 13 years worth of bad habits again, and when that's why they go through there and got to erase it to make you, hey, this is what a chief's supposed to be. And then you pick that up, and then you build on that, and then you go up for senior chief. You know, and it's so funny because I remember when I picked up senior chief, and I talked to their command master chief, and I go, how come the chiefs look at us funny now? I feel like they don't look at us. I was just a chief just the other day, and now I'm a senior chief. And they're like, and he says, that's just, the expectation is a lot different from you. You know, it says, remember when you made first and you made chief, and then all your buddies that were first class who didn't make it, how did they look at you? And that was the same aspect. I'm like, oh, wow. You don't dog on them, you know, if you're, you know, the guys that are made chief that didn't make senior chief, you don't look at them any different. They just look at you differently. And that was all through the whole, all the way up to the ranks, you know.
When you make chief, you're in the top 10% of the Navy.
Oh, absolutely.
When you make senior chief, you're in the top 5% of the Navy. And when you make master chief, you're in the top 1% of the chief.
You have a better chance being an admiral than you do a master chief in the Navy. That's the word on the street. And it's a great honor. I mean, it's not an easy ride to get up there. And again, it's based on, you know, promotion-wise, it's just catching the wave just right. And what your job is for the Navy, you know, if there's a high demand or, you know, for us being CVs, we did have conflict really caused a lot of high turnover rate and gave a lot of people opportunity to be promoted. But at the same time, you know, you get some of these fields that, you know, they're lucky to promote one. You know, I've been on some of these selection boards where they might have one guy, one master chief for that was open and it's been closed for the last 5 years. That's how tight it gets.
Well, that's just it. And then with a drawback in the United States Navy, that reduces the billets that are available
yes.
for open job occupation opportunities. And so you've closed down a couple of different battalions, haven't you?
I was a command master chief for two battalions, and my job was to shut them down. I mean, the job
was back east, right?
Yeah, they were all both back east.
Little Creek, Virginia?
Well, that was when NCD was when they got closed up to NECC.
And that was a Naval Construction Division.
Yes. And then they, you know, that's a big branch itself because it's got the EODs and all the other organizations. So we're all underneath one umbrella now.
Which is Explosive Ordnance Disposal.
Yes.
So when you're we're easy talking acronyms. So sometimes we're talking to the public that they don't know what any of these are. So
that's why I have
explain
you,
some of those to them.
You're my Thor.
So, cause it's, yeah, that's right. So,
but
that's my delegation.
And then I went to Felt Bellborn, closed that one. That's outside of the D.C. Beltway, and then to Chicopee, Massachusetts. And then every time people saw me coming, they call me the Green Reaper because every time I come around, I'm only there for a year because I'm shutting somebody down. So.
And, well, I tell you what, we appreciate that because when you shut down one of the facilities, we were able to get some of the items. We received a couple of shift answers for the museum, and then also we received part of the a block from the 9/11 strike there at Flight 77 into the Pentagon, and that is a key part of the museum. When you walk in, we have that right there as a piece of 9/11 from the East Coast. And I am grateful and thankful to you for being able to supply and give us the opportunity. I mean, we had to be eligible for those.
Yes.
But you were an opportunity for us to be able to do that. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Remember us, the Tula Kid? Well, we're back, and we would like to ask you a few questions.
Do you love TV? Do you like low prices? Call our daddy.
Hi, this is Doug Tooley with B&T Satellite. You know that by not calling the 800 number for your satellite needs, you get local service, faster installation, and most importantly, we speak your language. We ask the questions to ensure you get the right package for you and your family. We do big dishes, we do little dishes, we do internet dishes, we even do dishes.
Dad, I have never seen you do dishes.
That's because I do them most of the time.
So do I.
No, you don't.
Hey, kids, we're working here. Give us a call, and we'll help you figure out the best for your family. Whether it's dish services or local antenna help or streaming services, call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH, that's 241-3474, or visit us on the internet at btsatellite.com.
B&T Satellite is a DISH-authorized retailer. Restrictions apply. Ask for details.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more.
We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
As Shasta County gradually reopens for business, we can all do our part to stop the spread of COVID-19 by wearing a mask when in public. Cloth face coverings help reduce the spread of germs by preventing the release of droplets when someone speaks, coughs, or sneezes. Wash your face covering often, ideally after each use or at least daily. Wash with detergent and hot water and dry on a hot cycle. Here is Shasta County Health Officer Dr. Karen Ramstrom.
Remember, wearing a face covering is not a replacement for physical distancing, frequent hand washing, and staying home when sick. Your mask protects me, and my mask protects you. Together, we can stop the spread.
For more information, including how to make your own cloth face covering, go to ShastaReady.org.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Room.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
There are a lot of perfect reasons to never fight another war. There are a lot of perfect questions as to what's worth fighting for. And there are a lot of perfect fools who refuse to read the writing on the wall. But the truth is there are people who have made it crystal clear that it is their holy mission to destroy all we hold dear. And they are busily out searching for the fire to make this towering nation fall. Now we can just sit back and wait until they spill more precious blood, or we can seek these cowards out and nip their slaughter in the bud. Adios, sweet home and family. I am off to fight a war that must be won. You will know why I'm going when you see the snow-white rose of Arlington. Every blade of grass is sacred, every headstone is a shrine to somebody who was willing to put existence on the line. The liberty we take for granted, it was purchased with their patriotic lives. Are their sleeping spirits restless? Do they listen for the sound of the mustering of armies to defend their hallowed ground? Will we rise to the occasion and ensure that their life's legacy survives? Through the willows blow soft breezes, they are whispering my name, asking did they die for nothing, or die the keeper of the flame. Adios, sweet home and family. Wave goodbye to you, and a son. You will know why I'm leaving when you see the snow-white rose of Arlington.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions and the Snow-White Rose of Arlington. When I was out at Igo this last week putting together the display for Tom Johnson, World War II Marine Corps veteran who passed away, was killed in action November 22nd, 1943, which is tomorrow. 77 years ago, he gave his life for us, gave his life for our nation on the island of Taro and Basio. And as I was walking back and forth from the museum trailer to the office where I was putting together the display, there hadn't been any funerals in the afternoon during that time frame. And the sun was setting in the late afternoon, and the sky was blue, and the sun was sparkling through the yellow and orange and red trees out there, and they were shimmering back and forth. And as you walk out the lobby door and you start to walk toward the roadway there, the flag is centrally located down the walkway, and you could look up, and it was still at half-mast, and the flag was waving in the cool breeze, and the trees were shimmering back and forth, and in the distance, you could see the mountains and the row upon row of headstones that are out there, the white headstones against the green grass and the blue sky and the brown mountains, and the picture was so endearing in my thought, in my mind, of the men and the women who are laid to rest out there, the heroes of our nation. And it was quiet. They weren't mowing the lawns or anything, and you could just kind of hear the breeze blowing. And it was such a moment of just realization of the thankfulness for the freedom that we have. I just stopped for a second. I just absorbed that moment. I said, you know what? Thank you, Lord, for our nation. Thank you for these men and women. Thank you for our beautiful Northern California in this beautiful fall day, because it was just one of those moments that I was referring to earlier. And I was putting together a display. I found out information concerning a veteran who passed away. The phone call had come in. They were preparing to get the headstone and everything ready together. And United States Navy Master Chief Fred Sanchez served during World War II. He was one of the first frogmen, which was the predecessor. It was UCT, which is under underwater construction teams, which is part of the Seabees and part of the SEALs. That was the first time in American history, Navy history, where they put together an elite group of Navy personnel to be able to go in, but taken to the edge of these different islands during World War II, dropped off by submarines. They would swim in to the shoreline, and they would mark the reefs, and they would go into the shoreline so many yards in and find out what the Japanese strength was, where different pillboxes were, where different units were located. Sometimes they would leave the mark Kilroy was there, and the Japanese would know that the American forces had been there, and the Japanese never knew that they were there. But those men were the first ones after the lesson of Basio and Tarawa to find out where those coral reefs were so they could be blown up, or the landing could be in a different location where there weren't so many underwater obstacles. I had the great privilege to take Fred Master Chief to Honor Flight to see the World War II Memorial. And he and I had the opportunity to talk. He talked a little bit about his career and what he did and where he was and some of the things. In working with these different veterans during Honor Flight trips, they would open themselves up and they would talk a little bit more to you than they would anyone else, because it was such an emotional experience going to the World War II Memorial. And for them to realize that this was in their honor, it was a national thank you to them. And they would get to the point where, hey, maybe it is time to talk a little bit about this. Maybe I should share this with somebody before I was gone. And he passed away this last week. And Mike, you had the opportunity to know him out there at the Veterans Cemetery.
Yes.
And he was just, sometimes he was offset. He was a little bit quiet because he's still dealing with some of those memories and demons in his mind from where he was, what he saw, and what he had done. He lost his wife several years ago. And she is laid to rest at the Igo Veterans Cemetery. I call the Igo Veterans Cemetery Arlington West.
Yes.
That is my terminology for it. They've actually started to call it Arlington West. And I just think it's so neat. It is such a beautiful location. And it's the only thing between Igo is the ocean. The mountains is the ocean.
Yes.
And so we are Northern California. Igo Veterans Cemetery is Arlington West.
Absolutely, Rob. You know, and I hear it all the time when I do services out there, you know, just the comments, you know, I could be walking up behind a family and you can hear them say, what a beautiful place. And,
It stirs me. I've been there since 2003 when the governor showed up. Yes. There wasn't a headstone in that location. Wow. And that was in 2003 before I went to Iraq, my first war. And I thought to myself, someday I want to be a part of this.
Yes.
Someday I want to be a part of this.
Yes. You're the one that got me started out there doing the funeral services. And just last week, I was like you. I stopped and I was talking to this family member. We were talking about how neat the headstones were, and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh my goodness, I probably have done. I'm there exactly where I started. You know, I started with Chad Raglan.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I remember what an impact that service was. You know, for anybody don't remember, that was our local ELD from Anderson. And,
killed in action. Killed in action.
And that was my first KIA. And I remember where his headstone's at.
Right.
And now I'm looking, I'm like, oh, my goodness.
How many are there now?
How many are there and how many services I've done?
In 2008, when I started, we were burying as many as 6 World War II veterans a day.
Yes.
Because that was the time frame. From 2006 to about 2013 was the heaviest drawdown of our World War II society at that time. And over 2,000 services, I had the privilege of presenting flags to family members, to over 2,000 flags presented to the eyes of widows and children and men and sisters and daughters and aunts and uncles. And there's so many times for me, because I was still dealing with my PTSD, that you hold yourself and your composure and you present. And then as I walked away, it was just tears all the way back to the building. But that representation of what we have when we're presenting those flags, we at times are the only United States Navy representation that they ever see in their entire lives, because all I know is the sailor in the sailor's uniform, which is the blue cracker jacks.
Yes.
But other than that, you know, they've never been on a ship. They've ever seen, they've heard the stories and everything else. But we are that final representation of the United States Navy in the service of their country.
Absolutely.
And so you've been, we're coming up on a break here for a second here, but we'll talk more about that when we come back. But it's, if you have not had the chance to go out to the IGO Veterans Cemetery, you need to go. You need to be there. You need to just go out there and walk around the location and breathe in the fresh air out there.
A lot of history.
Right now is the time to do it with the colors, the fall colors that are out there. And read the headstones of the different locations and the battles and the men and the women and the names. These people are from our community. We'll be right back.
Redding Rancheria. We are proud to play our part in the community. This is Tracy Edwards, CEO of Redding Rancheria. Since the Community Fund was established, over $3.5 million in grants have been awarded to our local nonprofit organizations. We are dedicated to supporting worthy causes in our region and help make possible the impactful work done by our local nonprofits, and will continue to do so during these changing times. Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Shining Care presents a free webinar entitled Successful Caregiving, December 3rd from noon to 1:30 p.m. with valuable information and support for full and part-time caregivers and family members caring for a loved one. Many people who are giving care to others actually don't consider themselves caregivers, when in fact they truly are. Over 78 million people dedicate their time as caregivers for family or a friend in need, and more than 11 million people are caregiving while still caring for children at home. Family caregivers are extremely vital to the safety, health, and well-being of a fast-growing population of older adults. Because of this, Shining Care is inviting you to this free webinar, Successful Caregiving, December 3rd from noon to 1:30 p.m., featuring a Q&A session with experts in the field of caregiving. Now more than ever, it's important to take care of yourself while taking care of your loved ones. Shining Care invites you to sign up now for the free Successful Caregiving webinar at shiningcare.org.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back
to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Aloha, this is Kevin, Operations Manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
When that plane finally landed, was kiss the ground. Next thing I did was to go find my friends down at the old hangout. We drank some beer and talked a lot about old times. But when the booze finally hit Billy Joe Grimes, he said, I don't know what it is, seem different to me. I said, I just came back from a place where they hated me and everything I stand for. A land where our brothers are dying for others who don't even care anymore. If I'm not exactly the same,
good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and our guest again this morning is Master Chief Mike Van Gundy, United States Navy Seabees. And Mike, you did two tours in Iraq, right?
That's correct.
And so we want to talk a little bit about your first tour and your second tour, some lessons learned, what it was like to be away from home, how your family handled some of that stuff. I know you, at that time, I can remember you had two little kids.
Well, actually, no. They were after.
Oh, they were completely after that?
Yes.
After the second tour?
Yes.
Okay, I thought you had them during that time frame.
No.
And so now you have, now they're not even little anymore. Now they're growing like crazy. So tell us a little bit about during that time frame, well, at least your first tour, and then I know the second tour, you and I are both in Fallujah at the same time. We were coming, we had already been there.
Right.
And you were coming in to replace our unit, and so we saw each other just for a short period of time at that time.
Yeah, my first tour, I was 2005 when I went over there, and that was before Fallujah. That's where I wind up hanging out and talking about being on pins and needles and stuff. It's just it's so funny. We're coming up with Thanksgiving, and I'm thinking back then. I was grateful back then, you know, just because you know, you almost could set your clock or your watch to when you were going to get, you know,
when the mortar rounds coming in,
it was like almost, it was like clockwork, you know, so you always, you know, it's very important you always have a watch on because you can say, all right, I need to start, where's my nearest shelter, where I need to, you know, or, hey, you know what, I'm going to hang out here till after a certain time, then I'll scuttle across the compound.
Yeah.
So, but that was my, you know,
was that at Camp Knot? Wasn't it?
Well, we were in Fallujah, but Camp Knot was the internal camp inside of Fallujah.
So Camp Knot was his name. It was a CB, RCB location. It was named after Petty Officer Knot, who was killed there by a mortar round.
Yes.
In fact, I think he was killed at Aramati. When they had the big hit there at Aramati in 2004.
It was actually in Fallujah.
Where we were bedded down
was in that facility, and they took rounds inside that facility, and that's why they named it after him right there on that spot. Now Ramadi, which was up the street, I always say, yeah, those guys were constantly being tagged all the time. So.
Well, and the situation with what happened at Ramadi is a commanding general came in. Actually, it was an admiral came in and wanted everybody to assemble in the middle of the courtyard. So they assembled in the middle of the courtyard with 250 men, and all of a sudden they took 6 mortar rounds and lost, I don't know, it must have been 15 or 20 CBs that were killed by mortar rounds. It's like, what senior officer had enough brains and common sense to have everybody congregate in the middle of a combat zone where we could get hit with one strike of mortars?
Yeah, that was...
It was sad.
It was a very sad day, you know, because...
It's a sad day in CB history is what it is.
You know, again, it just puts things in perspective, you know. And I was, you know, the thing is, you know, to kind of peel back the history, but, you know, I remember when Desert Storm happened when I was stationed in Scotland, and we were on our way home from a deployment, and they were like, you might not be going home. You might be going straight from here down to Kuwait. You know, that's the time, That was actually my first time. I was like, oh wow, we're actually could be going to war, you know. And you just put everything in perspective. It's a little bit different.
Well, you train. They talk about it. Nothing ever happens. You stand up. You stand down.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, you're gone. The balloon goes up, and you're out of there.
And fortunate enough, our unit didn't get the, you know, that war ended so quickly that we were the last unit that did not have to go. So
right.
It's sort of like, okay,
that was at 29
cool.
Palms, right? We were getting ready, preparing to leave.
Yeah.
And they called it off.
Yeah. And then 2005 was actually, that was for real. And you just, like I said, it's just, you know, you pray that, hey, I hope I can come back home, you know. And I did. And then I went back in 2007. It was so funny. I went to the same base, same barracks. I was just one bunk off where I was in 2005, you know, and that one wasn't so bad, but I travel a lot more outside the wire, which would be outside the compound, and that was kind of scary too, because, you know, we were subject to get hit from, you never knew where.
IEDs.
You know.
Improvised explosive devices.
You know, from the ground, from the air, it didn't matter. So that was, you know, the job I had was a little bit more high risk. The opportunity for something bad was going to happen, could happen. And every day you were thankful, hey, I survived today, you know, and then you got up, started your statement, because everything over there, as you know, Rob, is routine. You know.
Groundhog Day.
Absolutely. And you know what you were going to do, where you had to go, and the thing is, you just hope that you got through the day, and any of the sailors you had working with you, or soldiers, or the Marines, that, you know, if they had a group of them working with you, you just want to make sure, hey, did I get you back home safely? Our home back then was inside the camp, you know, and then we start all over. So, but you appreciate the little things, and now it kind of makes sense why, you know, there's some things you don't talk about unless somebody's been in a combat zone and understand what it's like. Just the average Joe that don't know that, it's kind of hard to talk to them because they can't relate. There's nothing to relate it to.
Right. So. It's, I mean, a certain experience is a certain experience.
Yes.
So completely understand that exactly what took place for us, except for when we were doing the convoys. We never stayed in one location more than 3 days. I mean, we were on the road doing a mission every single day, if not every other day, depending upon the logistics and the vehicles and our team, what we're prepared in moving forward. Let me give you an example. You're being tasked to take 80 semi-trucks to a location, but you've never been to that location before. So now you're traveling at night, all night long. You're responsible for 80 semi-trucks and the personnel and the carries, plus your men, plus all the lives that you're responsible for. And you don't know where you're going. I mean, you've got a list. You've got a destination.
Yes.
But you've never been there before.
Yep.
So it's like going downtown L.A. and getting lost, only getting lost with people shooting at you in mortars and rounds. There was one night we came into Fallujah. Actually, we left Fallujah. We're headed into to Baghdad International Airport. And we were traveling down Michigan, which is a thoroughfare. It's a MSR, main supply route. And the tracers were just – there was a convoy ahead of us that was – it was an Army convoy carrying fuel. And the tracers – I mean, it was like red lines through the sky. I mean, it was just it was just immense fire that night. It was just this, the heavy combat fire. There was explosions. There was tracer fire going left and right. They were shooting – This army convoy ahead of us. I mean, we were locked and loaded. We were not in their avenue of approach yet, which is the where they were firing down range. And you come through a dip underneath an overpass, and you come back up, and that's where they had been shooting at them. They weren't shooting at the soldiers. They had shot up every single one of those. They must have had 50 semi-trucks full of JP-8. And they had fired, and every one of those JP-8 does not light on fire with the tracer round because it has such a high –
flash point,
because it's for the helicopters and for the MTVRs and for the Humvees. And as soon as we came up out of there, we were prepared to go down range, and they stopped shooting. And it was like, I mean, my lead gunner, I had already given permission to fire off everything else. I mean, we were gonna shoot M203s, we're gonna fire down range with the 50 cals and the 240 Bravos. And all of a sudden there was no fire as we went through this area, but the fuel it was like it had just rained. The whole highway was just soaking wet with JP-8 diesel fuel everywhere, and they were getting rid of our logistics is what they were doing. So we didn't have travel capability or be able to run helicopters and the vehicles. But I remember as I came through there, my heart was in the back of my throat because I knew that we were going to be meeting the enemy face to face. And I was going to have to make those instantaneous decisions as who was going to fire where and what we were going to do and how many men were not going to make it through the night.
Yeah.
And it was such a difficult time. I mean, just we finally made it in the wire there at ECP-4 going into Baghdad. And we all took our gear off and we just kind of took a breath because we were expecting to get hammered so hard. We were expecting to lose lives in that moment. And it was it was such a crazy time, such a crazy situation. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Hi, Rob Burrows here from Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services. We'd like to remind you to consider donating any leftover Halloween candy we can send to our troops during our Christmas packaging event. If you would like to donate leftover candy for packages for the troops or non-perishable food items for our holiday meals for veterans and families of those deployed, please call the Northern California Veterans Museum at 378-2280. That's 378-2280. And again, thanks for your generous support.
It's the glory, 100 stripes, 100 stories. It's the pledge of allegiance on the 4th of July. It's them handwritten letters from home. It's them sleepless nights alone. It's his newborn baby he left with his wife. Mr. Red, White, and Blue, lead down.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Senior Chief Ron Burrows. I'm your host this morning. Our guest again is Master Chief Mike Van Gundy. He lives here in Northern California. And Mike, you know, you and I had the great opportunity of working out there at the Veterans Cemetery. Once again, you came back out, and as I was retiring out, you became my mentor. I became your mentor for a short time as we were doing the transition and doing the services.
Yeah.
And it was always after being to Arlington and their changing of the guard, and the unknown, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and the professionalism that they had, we tried to bring that professionalism to our Northern California Cemetery here at IGO, and to make sure that, you know, when a veteran serves and they know that if they do their time, that somebody's going to be there to honor them. That we stepped up to the plate and we honor them correctly and we honor them properly and we give them the honor and the respect and that commitment to their service that they deserve. I just hope someday when I'm laid to rest out that there's somebody there for you and I that cares enough.
Yes.
That cares enough to be able to give that dignity and that respect to the veteran and the care to the family. And so, after, like I said earlier, after doing over 2,000 services out there, and presenting so many flags, handing those, looking into the eyes of those people, and you can see them from every different aspect, from bewilderment and shock and love, and sometimes there's hatred.
Yes.
I mean, it's just, there's just ex-wives show up and all kinds of different things. I mean, you see, you and I have been at funerals where it's been a circus, and we just stood our ground. We did our job. We got out of there as fast as
I still think about Chester.
That's what I was
thinking. Or not Chester, but Quincy.
Oh, was it Quincy? I was just thinking about that one. That one was just, it was just, we just bit our tongues. We got our gear. We got the heck out of Dodge.
I didn't think we ever going to see a sheriff roll up to the store order at a funeral.
But, you know, there's so many, that was probably the most extreme out of all the services that we had done. Just, it was a whole family of lunatics, I believe. And that's as far as I'll go with it. But
that's why you don't drink and do funerals together.
So, but at IGO, we don't see that. IGO is very regimented, and it's a whole different story. But you go to the smaller community services and the smaller cemeteries, you get hometown everything. And so, but Mike, as we're in our last 10 minutes here, just tell me about what some of the things that you've. Well, first of all, I want you to do a shout out to your family and your mom and dad, and then I want you to tell us about the end of your naval career, what you're thankful for, and what you've learned, and now that your last days are out there at the cemetery taking care of these honorable veterans. Share that with us, Mike.
Well, I do appreciate my parents and then my family, Shelley and Brody, Rowdy and Cameron. You know, it's kind of weird because, you know, I'm coming in 32 years, you know, in the Navy, and it's coming to an end. And I'm looking, kind of, be honest with you, I'm kind of looking forward to cut the umbilical cord. We always use the term in the Navy, just cut it loose and walk away, you know. And it's time for somebody else to pick up the torch and hoping that you installed enough pride in you train your trainers, you know, and if you did your job right, they should pick the torch up and then continue on. My future, Rob, I'll be honest with you, I haven't even put it together. You know, I'm just kind of just playing it by ear. And I think I'm in a good position where I'm at, where I can. I don't have to feel – I immediately have to get out and find me a real job now. And but –
Well, you can always volunteer for the museum.
Oh, yeah. Hoorah, volunteer. Voluntold, as we would say in the military.
Then I could actually go ahead and direct you again, right?
But yeah, that's how it's all
whatever.
Good.
It's a partnership.
Yeah. Love-hate relationship.
Right?
I love it. But, you know, I'm grateful that I had a successful career. I had great mentors, great friendships. And I think... You know, those can never be replaced.
No, they can't. It's a camaraderie that just it's locked in place, special place in your life.
And you know, Rob, I'm thankful for what you've done for our community. I've seen, you know, over the years what you've done, and the thing, especially, you know, my last job, you know, working for the Navy is out in the doing funeral services, and I appreciate you getting me, you know, I know you asked me several times to come out there, and I just said no. I just because you know it's just timing was not correct, you know. But you kept on it, and now I see the importance. And sometimes I look back, it's like man, I could have shifted things around to have been out there with you a little sooner. But no matter what, it still paid off, and it was an honor to keep your what you started out there and carrying that tradition on out there. And I, you know, I added a few things in there, but. You know, I make it more personal because, again, I'm from this community. It's like every day it seems like I'm turning around. It's like, hey, I know you.
We know these people.
You know, or they – or
these are our local heroes.
Yes. And – or it's so funny being, you know, at your local, you know, Costco or any other stores, you know, and say, hey, you're the guy that did my – father or my grandfather's service, we appreciate what you did, you know, and that, I think that just speaks volume what you were talking about earlier, the professionals that we, or the pride that we put in our work, because that's that lasting image that you want, and that, I think that is pretty much the gratefulness that I appreciate, that the families get that and they take that home and cherish.
Well, I know that, after coming back from Iraq, working with the doing the funeral services, because I was the director for Northern California, funeral director for the Navy at that time for several years, and coming out of combat, and dealing with the families, it forced me to face my personal demons from being in combat, because I was not ready to stop serving when we came home from Iraq. In fact, I'd volunteered for a third tour, and they said, no, you're going home.
Yes.
And I didn't realize I was as broken as I was, and fatigued and wore out, and my body had physically changed, and dealing with the combat stress that I didn't know that I had, that I still deal with at times. It just raises its ugly head. Sometimes I work long, long, long days because it just keeps my mind focused, and keeps me motivated to get the things that we've done. And like you said, when you're outside the wire, there's multiple times that we were, put in situations where we shouldn't have come home. We just shouldn't have come home.
Yeah.
Rolling up on IEDs, 155 rounds just outside of, on Michigan there, stuck at a secondary IED, and we rolled up and it was 3 feet from my Humvee door.
Yes.
With wires coming out of it going down the hill. And it's like we're in the middle of 80 semi-trucks, and how long is it going to take for us to pull where we can go ahead and set up a cordon, which is a separation between you and the bomb, and yet just outside my door. It's like, I mean, the realization that you could lose your life in a second.
Yeah.
It brings a whole totally different reality back to what you're doing. So it's just my opportunity, because this is my second chance. This first one was there. This is my second one, because as far as I'm concerned, part of the plan that the good Lord gave me to come back home again and to help serve in our community. And I know that as a senior enlisted and as a master chief such as yourself, that you bring not so much to the game plan of the military, but you bring that game plan to our community as we move forward in your service to our community. I just want to say thank you to you for your service to, because you helped teach me. We taught each other through the years. We taught each other.
Yes.
And we've worked together, and you've led me, and I've led you in different situations in our careers. And thank you for what you do in our community. Thank you for being a part of that. You've worked with the schools as a coach and as a referee and things like that. So you're a mentor to young people. And, I wish you well in your retirement, you and Shelly and your kids. And now you can focus, spend more time on them and help them to become good folks in our community. And so thank you, Mike, for your service.
Thank you too, Rob.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. And happy Thanksgiving to all of our veterans that are out there. Thank you.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.